You move me. Look out.
Wild Thing just come in and sock it to me one more time. Just like David McKay docked it to him one more time. We opened an episode last year with, I believe, Johnny O'Keefe, real wild one, the opening track from Rage. In honor of DMACC absolutely running through De Boer of Frio and sparking the Crows to life. And you know what? The cleanest, most inoffensive man in the AFL did it again. The Crows were scoreless, down by about 6 or 7 goals in greasy, wet, humid conditions in tropical North Queensland. Things were looking grim. Things were looking like they would probably be the worst ever performance by an Adelaide Crows team in terms of scoreboard impact. Probably not the heaviest loss ever, but the worst ever performance. And that first quarter and a half against St Kilda was absolute dog shit. It was the sort of performance that makes you just want to like throw things at the TV. But when you need someone to step up to the plate, when you need a wild thing to just tear through the middle and just make people pay and stand up and be counted and plant a flag and just get a little bit of red mist.
What? Red mist.
Red mist.
Red mist.
You get DMACC doing the business. And my word, wasn't that spectacular? We'll talk a little bit more about the St Kilda match and DMACC and all of the fallout from that shortly. But you know, we tossed up opening the pod tonight with the original Trogs version of Wild Thing, but we thought we'd go with a little bit more sort of acid tinted, sort of crazy version by Jimi Hendrix, which was live at Monterey. Monterey, sorry, jeez, you're a Monterey fan from way back.
Well, JMO's our resident lead guitarist, so.
When you think of psychedelic rock, the one Crow you think of is DMACC, straight away. And so really, when we were trying to think of songs about the Punisher, the Destroyer, I don't know, other adjectives to describe DMACC, I think Wild Thing is just perfect. And the Jimi Hendrix version where he sets his guitar alight with, what is it, lighter fluid. That's from that same concert, I believe, the live at Monterey Jazz. I think it's the Monterey Jazz Festival, I think, from 67.
just off the cuff.
Probably read it on Wikipedia a couple of seconds ago, but it's a fantastic song, and you really appreciate the psychedelic nature of it when Slugger's sort of playing a YouTube version through a little headphone microphone. So I reckon listeners, if you reach this far of the pod, well done for sticking it out.
If we've got time, we'll slice in the proper version in the editing suite, but 90% of the time we can't be asked doing it.
We've got to edit sort of Tyra's defamation sort of statements.
Yeah.
Or having a go at the listeners.
So did you know that the Trogs were not actually the writers and original performers of Wild Thing? It was actually written by American songwriter Chip Taylor. And I love it. There's something about Americans of a certain vintage where they've got names like Chip.
Hank.
Hank. Yeah, fantastic. I love it. And so, yeah, it was written by Chip Taylor, but popularized by English rock band The Troggs, originally recorded and released by the American rock band The Wild Ones in 65, didn't chart. Then The Troggs single reached number one in the Billboard Hot 100 and number two in the UK singles chart in 66.
Gee, that sounds like a legal disaster.
And do you know what? Do you know what? Rolling Stone, I love a good list. And Rolling Stone magazine put together a list of the 500 greatest songs of all time. Guess what number? Guess what number?
465.
I was going to guess in the 400s.
Yeah, you've undersold it. 257.
Where did you two rank in that list?
Well, that's just an album. That's not a song, Tyler. Oh, sorry. So you've embarrassed yourself straight away.
clearly, I'm a massive U2 fan.
can I ruin some mystique though about Chip Taylor, Slugger?
Oh, please.
Because I've clicked through a bit further on Wikipedia. He wasn't born Chip Taylor. He was born James Wesley Voigt.
Oh.
And I think that ruins it a bit because, I think you're right. Like Chip Taylor, Forrest. I don't know. I was going to say Forrest Gump, but another type of Forrest. I've actually my wife's got an uncle Forrest.
Really?
Good American uncle.
Yeah.
Chip, Hank. They're just fantastic American names. But it wasn't given it to him. He was born James Wesley Voigt.
How do you make that connection? There's no connection.
I don't know.
What is Chip supposed to be short for?
Mm-hmm.
Charlie?
Charlie. Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah.
So number one, out of interest, number one was Like a Rolling Stone by Bob Dylan. Of course, the Rolling Stone magazine is going to do that. And then number two, you'd like this, Jamo, it was Satisfaction by the Rolling Stones. So,
Imagine by John Lennon.
Greatest Songs.
Oh, Greatest Songs.
And then
Coldplay will be in there then.
What's Going On by Marvin Gaye, and then Respect by Aretha Franklin. Then Ra 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 Ra. The first modern song is Smells Like Teen Spirit at number nine.
Any Floyd in the top list there, Slugger?
Floyd. There is no Floyd in the top 10.
Where'd Dancing Queen come?
Well, I tell you what, Born to Run by The Boss came number 21.
Born to Run. The interesting thing. So what are we gonna go off on? Are we gonna talk about DMAC? We gonna talk about the game? What do you want to do?
Well,
Slug?
Look, it's a monthly. It's a monthly.
It's
podcast.
A month. Yeah. Trend analysis.
So it's trend analysis rather than jumping at shadows.
Yeah.
And there's been quite a bit to go on, but just before we move on from this Rolling Stone list.
Ooh.
Number 500 was More Than a Feeling by Boston.
Oh God,
I know that song.
Really?
There would have been such an argument over 500, like number 500. Like there would be thousands of songs that you could put in there that no one care about, but they probably spent half their time arguing what's going to be number 500.
Yeah,
because that's really setting the tone for this article. Boston.
Yeah, Boston. There you go. I'll tell you what. Yeah, just.
Well, I hope Chicago made it in there for balance.
Yeah.
And Texas.
Central.
Oh, Texas.
Yes. They're
nice.
Scottish band,
weren't
they?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
I haven't heard about Texas lately. Just a confusion.
Was that David Brent? David Brent. He was bigger than Texas?
Yep. He also liked that other All Life. What was that, Jamo?
Is that Sade?
Desiree.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. Anyway, great. I think we put a close to that link.
We'll draw a line under that.
What was the last game?
The four games we're covering today are Melbourne, Richmond, Collingwood, and St Kilda. Those are the four games. And so we last recorded just prior to the Melbourne game, where some of us were saying we're going to get flogged, and then some of us were saying if this game was played 10 times, we might win one.
I tipped them that game, Slugger. I'll go back and listen to it. I tipped the Crows that week.
Oh, very good. I think you did. But I tell you what, I tell you, this year has been far more, you know, we're only slightly better than last year in terms of wins and but this has been such a more enjoyable year to watch the Crows than last year. Because last year we were out and out terrible, like with no redeeming features for at least half of the season. Whereas this year we've had two of our best upsets of all in recent memory with the Geelong and the Melbourne game, and then one of our greatest comebacks in the St Kilda game. And sure, we've had a few shit games in between there because we're not stringing four quarters together very often. But it's been quite an enjoyable year. And the Melbourne game was just one where it clicked. We played pretty much four quarters and we came to play, and it was high intensity all day long. And the umpires were against the Crows. There were dodgy frees getting paid them all game. And then right at the end, Tex, just the biggest clutch goal. That guy's just got big balls, just big balls. He just went back and look, it was only 40 out, but that counts as a fatty.
I'm glad you're you go, Sam. You go.
No, you go.
I do remember just being so frustrated by the umpiring most of that game. It seemed like we were just, everything went against us, rightly or wrongly. And then in the last 2 minutes, there were a couple of quite contentious decisions.
Mm.
But then for the Crows, for being, what are we, 14th on the ladder right now, we have managed to keep within, or higher, whatever we are, but we've managed to keep in the media narrative for various reasons. Geelong upset, David McKay like having to change the rules of the game, and then just blatant cheating in the Melbourne game. It wasn't because we'd been putting up with such rubbish for three and a half quarters.
And then there was one bad decision at the end.
But it doesn't matter, it touched his hand. Technically, it was correct.
That's the other thing. So you've got these Melbourne Victorian media saying, could the AFL reverse it? Because it should have been a free kick, and then they definitely would have kicked at least a point, so it should have been a draw. So it's just changed the outcome of the game 2 days later.
Yeah, but if there was a VAR, it would have come out he was correct.
Or they wouldn't have been able to overturn it. Yeah,
they couldn't have overturned it. Because the
vision was sort of showing it might have flicked a finger or whatever. But then the AFL came out after and said, no, that wasn't it. It was just he looked at it. The umpire made a mistake. He was sitting on the angle he was. He thought he was handballing it to Dodé and he just missed the target. But, yeah, it was frustrating at the end of that game. Like all you wanted to see is these like Fox footy commentators who just don't know anything about the Crows or just bash them through a position of ignorance all the time, just having to eat their words and go, yep, you know what, the Crows actually played really well. They're a really good side. But all when they put the four quarters together, but all they did was just piss and moan about that umpiring decision. And it was just,
absolutely. Yep.
It took all the gloss off. It took all the gloss off what was one of the greatest moments in home and away game history as a Crows fan.
Like, were you there, Slugger? Yeah.
No, I wasn't. I was watching it at home. I couldn't get out to the game, and it was one of those games where I was cooking dinner and watching it, and got really close. It got really close, I was throwing the kids in the air and almost bringing their heads on the ceiling sort of stuff. It was
I was there, and when they kicked that goal in 20 minutes into the last quarter, and we went down by two and a half, three goals. I upped and left and went to the toilet and I was done. And on the walk to the toilet, I heard a roar and they kicked a goal. And I was just still wasn't convinced. And I kind of thought, well, I better go back and sit next to my mates and do the right thing. One of our mates had got us free tickets for the game, sitting in, plum seats, first tier of the members. And then we fucking turn it on and Tex kicks his fatty and, well, semi-fatty, what do we call it? Semi?
Three quarter.
Semi, yeah. And And then Fog takes his mark out of nowhere. It was just,
yeah.
I tell you what, I haven't been a member of the Crows for a long time, but we've been fortunate enough to see some pretty spectacular games there. I think the three of us went to that Collingwood game a few years ago where they didn't hear the siren gate.
Yeah.
Charlie Cameron's first game.
Yeah, Crows.
We have also been to some pretty horrendous losses to Melbourne at Adelaide Oval.
Yeah, that's
I think it was it Brett Riley's last game when
it was raining and Bernie Vince did Bernie a hard Vince. Tag on Dangerfield and that was just woeful.
And it's, Melbourne was so
that was the
shit.
Game that we ended up in the Melbourne Change Rooms, wasn't it? Were you with me that night?
No.
It was. Oh, that was really. I don't know how that happened.
How did you get in the Melbourne Change Room?
Well, they let us go on the. They let us go on the. It was that Twilight game, so it wasn't the game that we. It wasn't. I think that Bernie Vince tag game. We actually won that in a tight contest.
No, the Bernie Vince hard tag game we lost. It was. Oh, okay. We lost heavily.
This was before that when Melbourne were really shit, and it was a Twilight game, and. And we lost by a few points, and you're allowed to go on the ground after the game. And we just got on the ground to walk to the other end of the oval because it was the shortest way, right? We wanted to go to the pub. And we kind of got down towards the other end and it didn't really know how to get off the oval because there was no kind of gates open and everyone was just heading down the race, you know, like the race that's kind of, I would say, what, in the southeastern corner.
Mm.
And we kind of just followed down, and JMO, me, and Rocky actually was with us, wasn't he? And then we were kind of standing behind David Neitz because he was up with us on the hill for some reason. And then we kind of get funneled down this side alley, and we just keep following David Neitz. And then all of a sudden, the Melbourne president's there high-fiving David Neitz. We get really close to David Neitz, like right up behind him. A door opens, and we're in. And then all of a sudden, there's Paul Roos and the whole team doing the debrief. And it's me, JMO, Rocky, and Rocky's dad. And we're kind of just standing there next to the door amongst like a whole bunch of other randoms. And then they're kind of talking around doing. And then there's the lollies table. Like, so there's all the people like right up against the door. And the lolly table is not far away, but it's on its own, right? And it's out there, right? So it's out in the middle of the ocean. And then Rocky's dad's like half pissed. And he just walks out there, just goes to the table, takes a bag, comes back. And
what,
then
what's the lollies?
Like, you know, just your general Allen's collection, your party.
Any physics or, you know.
And I'm waiting to get kicked out. I was like, we're getting tapped on the shoulder any moment now. There was no tap. And we, in the end, we removed ourselves. We were there for that long.
Yeah, you got bored.
The players are just milling around. Like, there was no beers. That's the problem. Like, we couldn't get a drink. And, it was a shame it wasn't the Crows. But, like, yeah, the one and only time I've been in the change rooms, it was – For one of the Crows' most famous losses.
That's quite a good story. Yeah, I like that.
Crows have been told before.
Yeah. So the Melbourne game was just spectacular. And then we came up against Richmond, and this is just as COVID the outbreak was happening in Melbourne. So the game was shifted to GWS. And we thought, oh, hello, we're up and about after beating Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, we've got Richmond. They're a little bit depleted. They're a little bit injury depleted. And we're playing them on a neutral ground. We thought we'd be, in with a red hot chance. But just the inconsistency of a young side and Richmond had a bit of a point to prove. And they well and truly did us in.
Late. That first half was bloody exciting. You sort of thought, we've done Geelong. We've done Melbourne. Could we?
Could we?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was 28 points in the end. So, yeah, it was. And the Crows actually hit the front. Like, they for the first half, they led. The Crows led.
Yeah. Kicked
six in the first quarter. And then it was just into the third quarter, then Richmond just piled on some goals. And then the Crows kicked back halfway through the last, and then Richmond kicked away. But well and truly weren't embarrassed. I can't remember any specific highlights from the game. Just general consistency of effort, I suppose, and just waiting for the inevitable moment, which did eventually come.
Yes, it did.
But then we had Okay, a tough game against the reigning premiers. We've got Collingwood at home. Collingwood suck. They're in worse position than the Crows at the moment. This will finally be the big win because we haven't had the big win, the really big, big win against a decent side for a while. Like we were expected to pump North by 100 points, and we only beat them by a good margin due to some junk time goals. Like we haven't really from start to finish pumped anyone, and we're thinking, oh geez, it's got to be Collingwood.
Yeah.
Do it against Collingwood, and the Crows just didn't show up for the first quarter. The first quarter is what set them off, and then
the first quarter was terrible,
and then gradually just started coming back and back and back. And then I think the Crows, they conceded 5-1 in the first quarter, but then they sort of arm wrestled back into the game, hit the front in the middle of the third before losing the lead, and then hit the front again with about 5 minutes
left. Yeah. That game, right? So that game, Nick's lost that game for us by in the last quarter he continually persevered with O'Connor in the midfield, and I know that 5AA and a few others pointed out, but it was bleedingly obvious watching. Not only was it O'Connor, but there was some other relatively inexperienced or non-regular midfielders in there in those clutch moments, you know, like I think Toby Green, the other little fella, Jamie Elliott, he got one goal basically straight off from you know, O'Connor kind of just not being there in the right spot, and it ran down and kicked a goal, put them in front, and then the very next bounce, he's still in there, and it's just like, yeah. I know he's a big body in that, but it's his second fucking game, and there's a game on the line here. I know we need to give opportunity in the hot moments, but that wasn't the one, you know. Like we've got a lot of good footballers that can play in the midfield and try and halve a contest, and that it just wasn't the right time to do it.
It was probably the most disappointing game for me all year because I thought we were in with a chance, and it's just the typical tease of the Crows of, you know, we did hit the lead in the last quarter, but we were ahead for about 15 seconds, and then Jamie Elliott kicks another quick goal. It's just straight from the center bounce.
He kicks six for the day.
And
didn't Taylor Walker kick 2-5 or something?
Walker had a real stinker, although
he was getting the ball a lot.
He played really well.
Luke Brown was out that game. I think perhaps that was this first week that he's been having a rest now for a couple of weeks. Hopefully he's back this weekend. But you just got to wonder, you know, if Luke Brown was on Jamie Elliott, would it have made a couple of goal difference? Because we had that young McPherson. Now, to be fair, a lot of those sort of lead and mark goals that Elliott got
in the first quarter
were because there was no pressure from the midfield. Yeah. You just sort of wonder, well, you know, I know he's only one player, but he probably would have made a difference. But I totally agree with you as well, Tyro. But, it was mismatches in the midfield that led to those easy goals. Yeah. We should have fucking won it. Like Collingwood, I know they've just beaten Melbourne, but they're junk.
Yeah.
They
played like junk, really. Like, it was a junk game.
It's like the Hawthorn game, and it was like the Freo game. There were games that the Crows played terribly, but good in patches. Hawthorn had the 10-goal quarter. In this, the Crows fought back a couple of times. But Collingwood, don't forget, they didn't have Grundy. They didn't have a recognised
ruckman. Or Taylor Adams. Yeah.
The Crows just found a way to lose. But all three of those games,
Collingwood doesn't have a forward line.
Well, they had Jamie Elliott.
Yeah, but that's it. But like Jamie Elliott played in the midfield. They put that the Dutch bloke. What's his name? The thug.
The Dutch thug.
Oh, Degoe.
Degoe. They put Degoe in the midfield that game. The American's out.
Yeah. Is Cox injured or is he just not playing?
I think he's injured. They sold Stevenson. Like they don't have a forward line.
Yeah.
And we still fucking lost to him. It's just that one was by far the most annoying one of the year. I know the Freo one sucked, but that one's just shit house.
And again, it's a Collingwood game. Like, you know, there's a bit more to it. I think Fremantle, you know, who fucking cares? But Collingwood, it's nice to get one up Occasionally,
we've got. I think we've got the worst record against Collingwood out of any team in the out of
I
any.
I think that I think I remember that as well. Slugger,
like the Crows' worst opponent in as far as like win loss ratio is Collingwood. It's ridiculous how much games we've lost compared to wins against them.
Well, they beat us here as well. That's the problem.
Yes, they do. But we don't learn, do we? Because we complain about the Crows teasing us and playing like shit. And then we go up to far north Queensland.
And then we thought, here we go. Crows in with a chance. Because
the chance.
Because the Panthers had a shit game and then they have a good game. Yeah. And this is it. And they'll come to the party.
And that truly was an awful game of football. Like neither team deserved to win.
It was absolutely dire. It was basically if you were introducing somebody to Australian rules football and you showed them the first quarter and a half of that game, they would say to you, "This is the shittest thing I've ever seen in my life."
Why don't the Crows just like try and kick the ball rather than like kick the ball to a teammate
string two possessions together.
No, they couldn't.
Like, they couldn't they catch. Couldn't. They couldn't mark. They couldn't like. They couldn't do anything. And it was just so embarrassingly woeful. I mean, we were at the pub watching it.
Yeah, thank God I was half pissed.
And eventually it got to like half time. It was just basically this is fucked. Let's just get on it and then just have a chat and see what happens. And then they got back in it. But it literally was like the DMAC attack on the ball was the turning point, because he didn't line them up like, you know, like that grand final where Brereton was lined up in the centre. It wasn't like that. You know, he just attacked the ball really hard and got the ball and in fair collision, flattened the guy. And it was like, at the time, I was saying, it's how bad is it for the Crows when DMAC is flying the flag and like shaking things up and getting aggro and to sort of like make a stand to lift the team. And you sort of go, that's just that it shouldn't have come to that. But the fact that he did it, it's like, well, you know, good on him. Good on him. And you know, it did spark the Crows a bit. And then, you know, kicked about six or seven straight points and then finally kicked a goal. And then they basically kicked the next seven, the last seven of the game and won like 9-8 with a spectacular over-the-head kick from Thrill.
And what a couple of minutes for him, because you've got that quite I guess lucky free kick in the goal square
he would have marked that if he didn't get his shoulder pulled down.
So he got a free kick, got that goal. I think does he get a mark or something, or is it a free kick in the pocket where he thinks, well, we'll just go.
I think that was a mark, or I can't
just
remember.
Go the
now,
check side. Yeah. Just go the check side, because all we need is a point, and then we're drawing. Yeah. Yep. And he goes, no, it's a drop punt. And you think, well, if he's confident for a drop punt, maybe he's going to get the goal. Maybe he's actually going to get the goal. And it doesn't get anything. And I think from memory, I kicked something at that stage and chucked the remote control. And then the bloody kick over the head, which I don't know if you remember watching at the pub, but again, I just assumed that it was going to roll through for a point. Yeah. Mm.
No, what I liked watching the replay is that he was about a foot behind it as it rolled over. Yeah. Like he kicked it over his head, turned around, and chased after it.
He shepherded his own goal.
He almost got a goal assist if he was going to suffer it.
And Fogg did something good, because Fogg did get his big ass in the way and just muscled that guy out of it.
Well, I'll tell you what, the pub went bonkers.
Yeah.
We were there with me, Slugger, and then a couple others, and Rocky was in the crew. Rocky went mental. And then we kicked on straight onto the spirits straight after that.
Absolutely. Yeah. But look, it was a hugely satisfying win, but a terrible game of football. Absolutely terrible.
I would happily, well, of course, I'd swap one for the other, but we just didn't deserve to win. Like, it was so far away from deserving to win. Neither team did. And I guess, how stupid am I? Maybe the Crows have just tricked me again, because how stupid am I for thinking that we could get back? And I think rationally, Somehow we won it. Like it's just supporting the Crows is just such an emotional ordeal. I don't know why we put it through ourselves.
You don't know any better. But look, the thing is, we didn't, as you say, we absolutely didn't deserve the win. But we got it. We probably deserved to win Collingwood, Hawthorn, Freo, and didn't.
Yeah.
But ultimately, this year, like, we're never going to get close to finals. It doesn't hurt. Like, I don't mind losing those three games that we should.
If we don't want to get too high up.
Players get games into them.
That's
the thing. As you said, you know, Taro, you mentioned, you know, young players playing in the midfield and potentially costing us the game. But you know what? They'll have a memory. They'll look back on it and go, next time I'm in a tight situation, I'll do this differently or whatever. And you know, if we get a top five pick this year and we do what we can to get the big prospect, the big SA prospect. Horn, I think, is
the... he's going to go number one, isn't he?
Yeah, we've got to, you know, it's like the year with Rankin and Lukosius.
We've got to pick, sorry, finish.
That year, we were looking at it going, oh, we just desperately want these two, and it just never happened.
We
got Chase Jones.
He's like pick nine or something, didn't
we? Yeah. Well, I was... So yeah, as we spoke about earlier, I'm kind of away on a business trip, and listen to the, so the Crows have got some of their own internal podcasts going, and you know, look, let's big up one of our, you know, sister podcasts, you know, they're peers to us.
The Crows official podcast.
Yeah. Sister podcast. Just give them a little ruffle on the head. Yeah. Welcome to the podcast world.
So the Rusciutto gets interviewed, and you know, they talk about all his history and all of that. But they talk about talks about what Rusciutto is kind of looking forward to the most, and he makes all his references about what he's excited about are around South Australian footballers and South Australian input. So like he talks about how we're really excited about getting some good South Australians like Harry Schoenberg, and he lists off all the South Australians, and then he starts listing off like even seeing young South Australian footballers go on a Port, like that does it for me. Like he's like and if you know, and I urge people to go and have a listen to it on a commute. As I said, it's not interesting enough to waste an hour of your life, but you know, on the bus it's good. Go and have a listen, because what Rusciutto says, they have got a South Australian agenda, and it's, I don't think it's, and we spoke about this, you know, I think after the draft we pissed off eight non-South Australians, we brought back seven, I think, out of the eight people we recruited only one was Victorian, something to that effect. They're gonna double down on the same again. I can see it. But you know, this podcast is not long, and I'm not long old, and I think it's the right approach, right? Like you look back at our successful years in 97 and 98, there's a huge South Australian contingent, South Australian coach, South Australian assistant coach, South Australian trainer. Like I think we need to do everything we can as Adelaideans and South Australians to kind of, you know, embody that state of origin spirit. So I'm fully on board with that, and yes, like hopefully we go as low as we can to pull in the best South Australian talent,
package them all up. So should we roll into some lettuce, shall we?
Yeah, do it.
So we've got Megan.
How is it in Western Sydney, Megan?
Megan, well, you know, I think Megan went to the Richmond game, I think, from living in Sydney, but I vaguely recall her saying something on Twitter. May have been her, may not. Apologies if not, Megan. But Megan said, how many other players do you think Mad Dog McKay will take out in 2021?
Mad Dog McKay.
Mad Dog. Is there a song called Mad Dog Slugger? Quickly.
Mad Dog.
Well, he's got form, as we said. You know, he knocked out that Greater Western Sydney player. I think, and look, you know, he's got so much bad press. It'd be very interesting to see what Boz has got to say about him. But I reckon he would secretly love. He would have hated the last week. Like nobody wanted to go to tribunal, but he'd love that tag.
Oh, Mad Dog. Yeah, I do. Look, good on him. Declan, Declan says, how many first and second rounders and what players should we give up to get Jason Horn? Is it worth absolutely selling the farm for him? Because we're not going to get pick one or pick two this year.
Well, Collingwood's going to go for Dacos regardless. So if North Melbourne go for him, then that's a problem. But if we might get to third yet, you know, third bottom. But Hawthorne, if you get that close, you're not probably going to get to him. What are you going to do? You're going to give up four and a player to get to three? It's going to be hard.
I just wonder whether, we haven't had Matt Crouch all year. And again, the Crows injury update, I think it says 6 weeks away. He's not going to play a game this season, you wouldn't think. And then you got to think, well, to what extent do we need him? Is it more value to give him to North Melbourne with, say North Melbourne finish second bottom, we finish sixth bottom, we give our first round and Matt Crouch and we get pick two for...
Where's Matt Crouch's value gone? You're giving him two or 300 draft points. Like, this guy's an All-Australian. It doesn't matter. I think we need to talk about Matt Crouch because people there's all this narrative that we should just let him go.
If we can get value for him,
how old is he? He's 25. He's a gun player. You're not letting go of Matt Crouch for anything. He's better than Brad Crouch, significantly better than Brad Crouch across the years that they've played together. We're not letting him go for anything less than a first round draft pick.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that we definitely should, but I think it's an interesting thought or interesting discussion when you've got a really top SA player that it would be fantastic to get as a coup, like with Phil Thorpe.
You can get them later. Let them go out.
Who do we get later? We say that, but we never got Pavlich.
There's no way Gold Keepers keeping both.
So here's the thing. Someone goes to Gold Coast or GWS, one of those clubs, then you can always get them back to SA. Yes. But someone goes to a Melbourne club, it's a big market. There's a lot of outside of footy earning potential, all of that sort of stuff. It's hard to get them. It's harder to get them back from Melbourne.
Yeah.
So behind us on the ladder, you got North. They're on 6 points. They're going to get the spoon.
Yeah,
and then Hawthorn's on 12 points. Gold Coast 16. Collingwood, Carlton, also both 16. And then we're 20 with St Kilda.
Yeah.
We might. So we're 12th. We might drop down to 14th or 15th. But I don't think we're going to finish 16th, so we're not even going to get pick three. So it's going to be difficult, very difficult, unless we package up and go, well, can we give someone three and a player or something like that to try and get to two? But, it's
tough. Yeah, you wouldn't want to be giving up much of a player for that, though, because, you've got to remember that pick two and pick three in the grand scheme of things, take the South Australian part, they're still very good players. You're not going to give Matt Crouch and pick three to get pick two.
Well, I wasn't just for one draft pick difference, but I think
you're giving the steak knives nothing decent.
He hasn't been on the park this year.
Jamo, you're delusional, mate. It might be best to hang up because you're not of a high enough quality to perform on this podcast. If you think Matt Crouch is worth just ditching off the books,
you're
a madman.
If we're following the Mark Ricciuto SA first approach, SA first.
Yeah.
We're not gonna get him by finishing bottom or second bottom.
Yeah, but get value for him. Don't piff him away like a an empty can of Coke. Like you could trade Matt Crouch for a pick in the 20s, probably. You're giving him away for 300 draft points.
What did we get for Brad?
We got a compo pick that was the end of first round, which meant we got
Sam Berry.
About 20, yeah.
Yeah, okay. That was quite good in hindsight.
Yeah. So, you know, you're probably Sam Berry looks like he's potentially kind of going to be around the Brad Crouch mark. So, you know, if you're going to be giving off players like Matt Crouch has got 5 or 6 years left in him, you've got to be cashing that in.
No, good point.
All right. Speculating about the ins and outs this week is Bozza. Got nothing, gents. Enjoy your evening, he said. Bozza
nothing about DMAC.
No. Bozza has certainly. If you follow Bozza's timeline throughout the DMAC week, it was quite amusing. He was celebrating like we'd won the grand final when DMAC come off. It's quite funny to see how people who have long wanted him out of the side, all of a sudden the injustice of it all. Sticking up for DMAC.
I don't want him suspended. I just want him dropped.
But yeah, no, it was an absolutely stupid act by Stephen Hawking. We'll get to that in a minute. But the Bozza said his selection this week, and selection is tonight. So this will, well, no, it's not tonight. It's not Thursday. It's Tuesday. Selection is Thursday. He's saying debut Pedler, bring in Brown, and also Fisher McCassey. I don't mind that at all.
I don't mind that.
And then he's saying McPherson and McAdam and 14 and DMAC out. So fight hard to get him off and then drop him.
There's no way DMAC's getting dropped.
And then he said, make DMAC a sub. Give Hamill a run in the SANFL, Worrell another game, get Cook in within a month along with Church and Borlase and Gollant. So, you know, bring in these youngsters.
New Church. No, he's not ready.
Yeah. Bring in as many of these players as possible in the back end of the season to get
some. Yeah. It later, Pedler's not ready. Pedler last 4 or 5 games a year, maybe. I don't mind bringing
right in the NFL. Has
Max been back a few weeks?
Max had some good games, Jamo.
I was surprised Worrell jumped him, to be honest. I know they play different positions, but or different roles. But yeah, look, it's we've got to play him this year. I would have thought we've signed him up. You know, he's giving games to people that have not knocked the door down but have played all right. You've got to give him an opportunity at some stage, I would have thought. The interesting thing is, you know, they're definitely persevering with Chase Jones in that position.
Yeah.
And now, you know, they've gone and drafted that Patrick Parnell from the VFL, you know, NEFL, basically a small defender. So exactly
Chase Jones sort of position,
but now he's got another kind of like for like body. Granted, nowhere near the pedigree in draft number, but it'll be interesting to see how Chase Jones goes over the next 5 weeks, because you know we thought McHenry was a dud, but you know, with 8 weeks of solid football, getting picked every week. McHenry is now we can't drop him. He's a completely required player, top 15 player probably.
Absolutely. No, he's been good. On the messenger.
Lockie Scholl was dropped as well from, I think, last
That's
game.
True.
Yeah. He fell off a cliff form-wise about a month ago. And so, you know, people have complained that DMAC is keeping him out of the side, but he's keeping him out of the side and form. He was terrible, Scholl, for a few weeks before he was dropped.
I mean, from memory as well, Will Hamill was atrocious in that St Kilda game, I think, from memory. But I suppose, well, we're dropping.
He was the sub, though, wasn't he?
No, Scholl was the sub, but they didn't sub him on.
Oh, that's right.
Fair point.
I don't know. So, Hamill's got so much upside. He's so quick. And when he picks that ball, like he'll pick up the ball up from the ground, and when he makes that first dart, with the ball. Like he picks the right decision every time. Like there's something about Hamill. I think we've got to persevere with him because he is like, you know, 1990s half backer for me. Like I think he's going to be fantastic.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's well. Yeah, we've got Brown coming back. Yeah. So I suppose you've got to get McPherson. That's fair. But Scholl might have a game in the twos then.
Yeah. This week. Tough one.
Mm. All right. Andrew from the Barossa has hit us up on Facebook, a messenger. We still do have an active. We still do have a Facebook account, believe it or not. It gets looked at once every year. Andrew, boys, I just saw you were. There's a bit of a great cricketer reference. Boys, yeah. I just saw you were back in the svelte new monthly format. Although I miss the weekly Mitani chicken salt updates and schnitzel topping chat, I'm still thankful to have your banter back. Regarding the lads in the tri-stripe, I have to say I am really liking that we are finally playing the power forward combo of Tegs, Tex, Fogg and Philthorpe. I think Tex is pretty safe to snag the most goals for the year, but who do you think will come in second out of Fogg and Thriller? Both on 13 snags after the Collingwood game, he says.
Yeah, right.
Now, I can't remember how many Fogg kicked against St Kilda, but Philthorpe kicked three.
Fogg may have got one or two. Look, if they both continue to play, I think it's a no-brainer. Philthorpe's going to fucking brain him.
He's doing very well, isn't he?
He's only played four or five games, hasn't he?
Yeah, I agree. And Fogg, did he even trouble the scorers, Fogg?
Did he trouble the statistician?
He's low down the list. He got 33 fantasy points, 0-0, 9 disposals.
Yeah.
But look, he did get an incredible 1% out of the Shepherd of the game when he got at the end. It wasn't good weather for key forwards. Given that we were just bombing tumble punts into a congested forward 50.
He could have laid a tackle though. He also didn't do that.
Well, look, I think it's an interesting question, but I think it's you're going to have to predict who's going to play the most games, and
I assume they both play the same. No, I think he's talking about this year.
I know that. But I mean, like, there's probably a time in this year that Philthorpe will get rested and or potentially dropped. You know, maybe they'll want to give Himmelberg another go later in the year. I think Frampton's colours marked or names marked. Fogg, look, I think Fogg's going to be. I think they're going to persevere with him. He's doing enough. Just
he is. You know, they're just got to get the games into him now. Get him to 50 games.
Yeah, and once Tex goes, once Tex goes, I think he'll kind of come on in leaps and bounds with that kind of extra responsibility. He'll have more space.
Okay. Jeremy, you're falling over there, mate. I reckon Philthorpe will get more goals this year.
Yeah,
just because I think I
do agree.
Just this year.
All right. Yeah. Jamo, do you I hadn't heard if you had collated a list of jerks, so I put a little poll out this evening. Biggest jerk of the past month. And the options to choose were Steve Hocking versus DMAC, Joel Selwood and his dirty acts. Or the Vic Media after the D's game. Those were the three jerk nominations that I put out there to the electorate to see what they thought. Did you have any outside of those three you wanted to talk about before we run through this list of shame?
Oh, that's a good list.
Caro?
Oh, Caro with the pregnancy. She's terrible. She's
I love how when she was on it. I'm not going to be popular with what I'm about to say, but I'll go with it.
I'm sorry to defend it, everyone, but I stand by by my ridiculous story. It's not based on fact.
No, right.
Well, she's just in the Vic media, isn't she? She's in that response.
Lump her in.
Tell me the results.
All right. So we'll go from worst, from least popular selection for jerk to most popular selection for jerk. So with just under 15% of the vote, was Vic media after the D's game.
Granted,
this was a month ago. There's a lot of recency bias in these sorts of polls. Yeah. So people cast their mind back a month, and then they can't, like, the simmering rage dies down. You still have the memory of the incident, but you don't have your blood boiling anymore.
I bet if you put Scoop McClure in brackets next to it would have done 100%.
So the Vic media, and we touched on this earlier, just the way they carried on, just give the Crows some bloody credit for their big win instead of just focusing one free kick at the end of the game that didn't go the Crows the way. We're against the three quarters of dodgy decisions that went the other way. Coming in second with just over 35% of the vote Joel Selwood and his dirty acts. Nothing like a little bit of eye gouging, a little bit of just treading on people's shins, just incidental. But basically, they call it in European football, they call this sort of behaviour shithousery. Where you're just being an absolute wind-up merchant and you're just being an asshole. Like, just behind the most you can get away with in terms of dirty acts.
Yeah.
Just to in the hope that someone will lash out at you. And that Real Madrid defender, was Sergio Ramos.
Sergio Ramos.
And he was number one for that sort of stuff.
Holery.
Yeah. And so Joel Selwood, and look, you know, he's Geelong fans love him, and he's the pretty boy, he's the captain, he's got the endorsements and everything, but he's a bleeder. And he's always bandaged up bleeding, and it's not because he's brave, it's because he's got really thin skin, and he ducks his head into tackles all the time.
At least he doesn't go surfing in a suit.
Yeah, that's true. And then so you know, he's a ducker. He bleeds easily. He does dodgy, dirty things behind the play, like eye gouging. And the fact that you can attack someone's face eye gouging, which in other sports is a significantly towards the end of the scale in terms of seriousness, and get off with a fine. Yet David McKay attacks the ball as he's been trained to in his clean-cut football career, throughout his clean-cut football career, where he's never upset anybody ever, and then gets like treated like he's an absolute criminal. That moves us on to the number one, which got 50% of the votes, Steve Hocking. Steve Hocking. Yep. So the match review panel looked at the game of Crows versus St Kilda and said, nothing to see here. No rules were broken. He attacked the ball. He was he had his eyes on the ball. He got to the ball at pretty much the same time. His arms were out reaching for the ball. He wasn't bracing for contact. Play on. All the commentators afterwards were like, yep, just a fair good hard attack on the ball. Great stuff. Lifted the team because he showed he was up for it. The match review panel, the people who are responsible for this,
the independent body.
Yeah, nothing wrong with it at all. Nothing wrong with it at all. Mm. And yet Steve Hocking decided to send him to the tribunal without even naming a charge. They had to wait 2 days to even make up a charge that they were going to charge. Imagine being arrested and said, we're arresting you because we don't know what we're going to charge you with. But we're going to arrest you, and we're going to make something up in 2 days' time, and then tell you that that's what we're going to charge. But that's what happened. Yeah. And
but
then
it's
he ended
worse
up.
Than that.
Oh, and then he ended up fronting up to the tribunal, and the AFL's prosecutor, for want of a better word, was absolutely going to town, trying to paint David McKay like he bloody squashes kittens and he's like a serial killer, and it's like, for fuck's sake, like it was the most disgraceful piece of conduct that I've seen from the AFL in a long time. And
things like we've measured it, you know, the point, the distance between the ball and the two players, one was 10.2 meters, one was 10.3. So we're talking about 10 centimeters over a distance of 10 meters. And that prosecutor's saying straight faced to David McKay, I put it to you that you knew you were behind that or further away from the ball and that you knew that there were, you were going to get there after him. Like, how could you?
Yeah. And you ran as fast as you could at the ball, didn't you? Didn't you, David?
Yeah.
And then, and David's like, well, I don't know if it was the fastest I could. I was running to try and get to the ball. Like, I ran as fast as I thought I need to get the ball. And he's like, no, admit it. You were running as fast as you could.
Admit
to try and say that somehow running as fast as you can to get the ball is like a criminal act. That's a bad thing. How dare you run as fast as you can to the ball? You should have run slowly and then stopped. And then waited to, for him to get the ball. And then to, can you imagine the pylon if McKay had waited for him to get the ball and then tried to tackle him and missed the tackle? Everyone would have piled on, weak as piss, typical.
I know. Yep.
And he did everything that everyone criticizes him for not doing. And then all of a sudden he's on the it's like O.J. Simpson, the trial of the century. The difference being that O.J. Simpson did it and got off.
Oh. Allegedly. but let's cast our mind back about 2.5 months ago when Dangerfield jumps Kelly. And bumps Kelly immediately after he's – is he kicked the ball or handballed the ball? One of the two. Yeah, but in a really vulnerable position.
Yep.
But Dangerfield arrives late. His only intention was to bump. Dangerfield was still fighting, saying, oh, it's a football thing, you know, you can't get rid of the bump. That was only ever going to be 3 weeks. And that was a horrible, you know, Kelly was knocked out before he hit the ground. That was an awful look in the game. And yet a few weeks later, we're saying that this just accidental collision where McKay's not getting someone where they're like horribly vulnerable, having just disposed of the ball. They're just two people going at it. And they think that's an appropriate sort of comparison of punishment. It's just, it is just outrageous. I was listening to ABC radio when the charge came out on the Sunday, and I think it was Cameron Ling and Ramon and maybe Alistair, I've forgotten his name, but they were scathing of the AFL. The ABC guy said it's like a decision that the Kremlin doesn't like.
That's the weird thing, JMO. It's like it's your employer is saying, no, we've got an independent body here to assess these things so it doesn't have to get messy. And I, the employer of the AFL, are going, no, I want to take you to court. I think you, the person I employ, are guilty and I don't care about what this independent body says. I want to take you down. So it's like, it's the strangest dynamic having the AFL acting like they do. It should be, you know, if anyone wants to go on, you know, persecute or prosecute him in the box, it should be the independent panel. It shouldn't be your employer.
No. And the fact that Hocking, in effect, interfered, he created a show because he wanted to prove a point and test, you know, the sanctity of the head and all this sort of shit. And look, it's all well and good to, at the end of the year, review and say, okay, look, these sorts of things that happen, let's change the rules a little bit later on. But to in effect, and the Crows, the Crows, the legal counsel put this really well. He basically said, how can the rule interpretation be changed literally overnight, given that other players were bumping and not being pinged, and then literally overnight, all of a sudden the rules have been changed, but no one has been told, and then David McKay's been fronted up to the tribunal. It was just a disgrace.
And David King, you know, going back to who the three biggest clowns or jerks and Vic Media, I think should actually be it, because he was arguing ferociously that David McKay should get weeks and weeks. I think someone on Twitter said to him, well, what about, was it Aaron Norton knocking out someone in a marking contest? And Dave King's response was, well, that's a marking contest. How is there any fucking difference? If we're saying that you're no longer, you have to approach every contest with a duty of care, well, that is the end of a forward crashing packs. Because that's the definition of what a forward's trying to do. They're lifting up the knee, they're crashing packs, they're hurting the poor back pocket who's dropping down in the hole. you know, if you're saying David McKay, that beast is getting three games for that. But then on the flip side, you know, Jason Cloak was one of the Cloak brothers, like killing these St Kilda kids. I just remember, like, from years ago, and everyone thinking, oh, what a great, you know, tough forward he is.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you rationalize those two things? Like, in my mind, the forward crashing the pack is far worse.
Oh, yeah. It's going to kill someone. Worse. Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you get someone's going to get a knee into the, you know, the
fin. And it's either a knee, a knee or an elbow into the head, or just a knee into the kidney.
Yeah,
like
we've
had people that have damaged kidneys and things like that. Mm. So, yes, the AFL can change the rules at the end of the year, but just make it absolutely clear. To me, and I'm sorry to round it out like this, I just think it suited them that it was a Crow player.
Yeah.
Because they were, you know, the Crows got the $50,000 fine for the COVID breach when you've got every other team who are leaving the airport not having their masks on. There's no, you know, there's just fast investigation that, oh, it's $50,000. What's, you know, they should have learnt from what they did in the Barossa. They didn't do anything in the Barossa 18 months ago. And they're still harping on about how the Crows almost ruined the season when Buckley's like fucking his mistress in Brisbane when they're supposed to be in lockdown, allegedly.
Playing tennis,
playing tennis, allegedly. But like it to me, it's just the Crows. The idea that the Crows cheated in that Melbourne game with the umpire decision in the last minute. Well, wasn't it Geelong a couple of weeks before where it was clearly holding the ball, but that was quickly sort of brushed under the rug. You know, if it happens to the Crows, it's suddenly
clickbait. Like, they all say we're our own worst enemies. And that traveling, like, you know, when you drink or eat, you're allowed to take your mask off. Like, people I've been on the planes a lot. There's a lot of people with their masks off. If you're holding a drink bottle, it's just
got a coffee. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, the crows are getting fucking, you know, raised for nothing. It's bullshit.
Raised. So in conclusion of my TED talk, I think it's, Vic Media.
Overruled. Well, yeah. Wisdom of crowds. Well, that's the thing, and that's why you don't pass laws based on popular opinion. That's why you have an election, and then you elect people to then make the hard decisions.
Oh, did anyone see that tripe on ABC last night? Australia Talks. Oh my.
No.
Oh, that was bad TV, wasn't it?
Because John Howard was on and basically said the same thing as what you just said then. I thought you. Don't watch it, guys.
So we are playing Carlton this weekend. It is most likely going to be played in Melbourne because as far as I understand, as of Friday, Greater Melbourne can come into Adelaide. So the Crows will be able to go there, play and come back and not have any issues. So that's exciting. But Carlton... look, they beat us last year in the Bryce Gibbs farewell game.
Yes, they did.
But they're in a bit of a state at the moment.
Stink.
They are in an absolute
state. Even did you see there's an article on the AFL website weetering saying what's wrong with their defense, and like it's just weird reporting. And
who's the guy, I forget his name, he came over from GWS on a multi-million dollar deal,
Zach Williams,
and he's been absolutely, Jonathan Brown tore him a new one in the media this evening, basically like saying he's soft, he's shit, he's an absolute waste of money, he's a disgrace, he's not defending at all. I've got 300 acts that I can show from the highlights reel, but I didn't want to do it because it would just be too mean, but I'll just say that he's terrible. And you know, absolute bake from Jonathan
Brown. Right.
So it's the sort of thing that would people are saying, you know, this is great, this just before they play the Crows, he'll now get 40 touches and kick four goals. 109.
Whenever Buckley was in a bit of bad form, he just comes up against the Crows.
Yeah, and we've got a way of playing teams and into form. So I certainly am not not super confident about beating Carlton in Melbourne. I don't know at all. Look, you never know. It's in the race for the Coleman. We've got this. What's his name? McKay.
Harry McKay.
Harry, or they call it Mackay, do they?
Well, I think he's a Mackay. That's Andrew Mackay. Oh, no, he's Mackay. Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, he's Andrew Mackay.
Well, I think they refer to him as Mackay.
Is he related to Andrew Mackay? Is he related to Andrew?
Both of those tall blokes are his twins.
Really? Well, sons. Andy Mackay, ex-Carlton, but he's a South East boy I believe he's from Lucindale. He's from Fog Country.
He's
from Fog Country. Harry Mackay is on 41. Tex is on 37 in the race for the Coleman. Texas, look, I'd love to see Tex get a Coleman. He's never, as far as I know, never won one.
Not in 2012.
You go back 10 years.
It's 2012 Favola, was his
Favola in 2009. Then Rewalt, Franklin, Rewalt, Roughhead, Franklin, Kennedy, Franklin, Rewalt, Cameron, Hawkins last year.
Come on, Tex.
Did you say 2012 was his best?
Yeah, I think he got 60-something.
Yeah, so Rewalt got it with 65 in that year.
So. God, he must have been close.
Yeah, so there have been a few years where, 60s and 70s got it. The biggest one in recent years was Kennedy in 2016 with 80. Yeah, so, he's
I'd love
all he needs is a bag. I just want him to get a bag. I just want him to get a bag and get back in the lead for the Coleman. I just love for Walker after all the shit.
63 goals in 2012. God, he got close.
Yeah, right. Jeez, yeah, two goals, missed out by two. I just love, given all the shit he's copped in the last year, I would love it for him to get a big individual honour like that so everyone can finally write the puff pieces and say what a legend of the game he is. Look, we are playing Carlton. I'm not entirely confident. I'd love for the Crows to pump him 6-7 goal win. I think realistically, this is the sort of game that the current Crows will lose.
Yes, I agree. The seventh game that it's going to be horribly frustrating to watch.
Yeah.
They're going to tease us, and ultimately we'll fall short. And I don't know. Eddie might turn it on for a bit. I wonder who's going to stand Eddie.
Well, you think if we did have Luke Brown back, which Bozzo is suggesting he might be, then he would be the man, wouldn't he?
Yeah, I think so. Mitch McGovern's
we'll win. Put it in.
All right, so what's the
score? Yeah,
isn't it? 11 points.
11 points win.
Pretty
house,
isn't it?
JMO?
I'm following Sam.
Yeah, you think you're going to win? Yeah, look.
Are you going to price this right, me, and say by 12?
Yes, I will do that.
Yeah,
no, 10. Ooh. Under.
I really want the Crows to win. I'm leading my work footy tipping, and so now I'm getting to the point where I'm
what's the kitty?
I'm second guessing all my tips, and so
how much is in it, Slug?
It's not like tons of money. It might be $100 or something. I've never paid that much attention because I've never been into attention. Whereas this year I'm just on a hot streak. So I'm now started like, do I just pick the favourites? Do I just do the safe bet every time and rely on the chasers to do the outsiders?
Just
go sports bet.
Just do the odds. But I don't know. As much as I hate looking at odds for games, Crows Carlton, I reckon Carlton would be.
They're favourite Carlton.
Pick Carlton in your work tips.
Carlton are a favourite. So they're $1.60 versus $2.35. And if you know how the footy tips app tells you what percentage of people are tipping, what team? 60% of tipsters are tipping Carlton. I reckon I'm going to go Crows. Crows by 4 goals, 24.
Well, in a month's time when we do this again,
we're
going to have to find out where Slugger is on the
old
Yeah.
And what the booty is that he could
get. Yeah. the big booty.
$100.
All right. speaking of big booty, Boston, more than a feeling, coming in 500 in the Rolling Stone. Now, just watch for the riff in this song.
What?
Because there is a, or listen out for the riff in this song, because there is a very strong school of thought that Nirvana ripped off the riff from more than a feeling for use in Smells Like Teen Spirit. Just have a little bit of a think, a bit of a think when you hear it. It's in the chorus. All right. Well, anyway, thank you very much for listening, everybody. We will see you next month.